Chapter 6. Hannah found it hard to settle back into her old life at Oak Ridge. Too much had happened. Things seemed to have changed forever. "I'm going to marry Franklin," Dorothy announced a day or so later at dinner. "The date's set for May Day. Grandma says she can present me at court after I'm married." Matt indulged her with a big check to buy a trousseau of beautiful clothes. Eunice spoke of arranging a sumptuous wedding for her granddaughter and launched into a round of entertaining. Hannah found, as the bride's stepmother, she was included in much of it. She saw more of Hugo. Sometimes they spent most of the occasion talking together. "For her, everything's possible again," Hannah said to Matt when dinner was over and the children gone. "Don't sound so depressed," he said. "What's the matter with you now?" Hannah knew it would do no good to mention her need for a child once again. She didn't have to. Matt's grey eyes flashed at her aggressively. "You only feel like this because of the baby you had. It's playing on your mind." He turned impatiently back to his book. "It makes me feel thwarted and useless because I haven't a child to care for." "You could try caring more about me," he said sharply. "I do care, Matt." She met his gaze steadily. She wasn't functioning properly as a wife, and they both knew it. "If not a child, perhaps a job. Could I help in the factory?"
"What's the point of that, Hannah? You couldn't do anything but office work."
His voice was full of impatience. "I could learn, like Greg." She hoped they weren't going to end up like his parents, in a state of permanent domestic combat.
"No, your job is to run the house. Look, I'm just as frustrated as you are. Do you think I like slaving in that factory week in and week out? You wouldn't like it."
Hannah had heard all Matt's dissatisfactions many times over. He felt archaeologists were now uncovering the secrets of ancient civilizations at a breathtaking pace. He longed to be there with them on the digs, sharing the fascination.
"Perhaps I'll take a holiday, go to Ur of the Chaldees. Perhaps I'll write to Leonard Woolley and ask if I can give a hand for a week or so. Do Greg good to manage the factory for a while."
"He's keen," Hannah sighed. "He needs to show his grandfather how well he can cope."
"Perhaps after the wedding," said Matt, because Dorothy's wedding preparations were building up. "The lady mother's making a tremendous fuss about it."
Hannah smiled. She had married Matt in the register office in Birkenhead. Matt had told her his mother had arranged his first wedding. It had been a tremendous ordeal, and he didn't propose to go through anything like that again. He hadn't told his parents they'd set the day until a week beforehand. They'd been invited because he didn't want to offend them, but Eunice let it be known she hardly classed it as a wedding. Dorothy's wedding was to be very different. The national newspapers billed it as the country wedding of the year. Granddaughter of Sir Hugo Mortimer marries. There were photographs and articles in the society magazines. Hannah now knew what she herself had missed. It was a very extravagant affair, with 6 bridesmaids in pink and 2 pages in white satin. The guest list was enormous. The church was filled with flowers, and a full choir sang. Dorothy looked absolutely charming in a dress of ivory silk. Hugo had bought a new car, an Isotta Fraschini Sporting Tourer, because Eunice said the bride must have something more elegant than his Buick to take her to church. Eunice liked it because of the glamour surrounding other owners. "Such a lot of important people own one," she told Hannah. "Rudolph Valentino and Jack Dempsey, the Aga Khan and the Pope, even royalty. Foreign royalty, of course." The reception was held at Inns Hall, and as it was a sunny afternoon, the guests spilled out onto the lawn. The wedding cake had 5 tiers. Hugo was at her side for a lot of the day, introducing her to guests she didn't know. Hannah had deliberately chosen a green dress to show off his emeralds again. He'd noticed them, she knew, though he didn't mention them. When Dorothy and Franklin had driven off for their honeymoon and the guests were beginning to leave, Hugo led her off to see his garden, in which he took a great interest. He managed it as he did his businesses, by deciding what he wanted grown and exactly where it was to be planted,
and then delegating all the work to others. He was interested in fruit growing, and at the right season Hannah had admired the great bowls of strawberries and raspberries, peaches and nectarines. He was keen on roses, too, and the first buds were just coming on his bushes. "Everything is early in my garden," he told her. "It's very sheltered amongst all these trees." They were returning to the house the back way, passing what had once been the stables. "I've given up on horses. Never did take to them. Cars are the thing now." They paused in the open doorway. In the dim light of the old building, Hannah could see four cars lined up inside. All were highly waxed. She recognized Eunice's Lagonda and the Buick he usually drove. "Your new car made a big impression." She admired its elegant lines, open-topped with an extra windscreen to protect passengers in the rear seat. Already the running boards had been swept free of confetti and the bodywork repolished. 6-liter engine," he said. "Total luxury. Absolutely fabulous." "Eunice is planning to take it over."
"I wish I could drive."
"Would you like to learn? My chauffeur could teach you." Hannah felt overcome.
"I'd love to," she said. "I didn't mean..."
"You'd be able to get about more. It's a good idea."
"Would I be able to? Is it difficult?"
"Nothing to it. You could learn on the Buick."
"What if I prang it?"
Hannah followed him over to the vehicle. "I don't suppose you will." Hugo was smiling. "Anyway, as long as you don't damage yourself, I won't mind."
He opened the driver's door for her to see the instruments. Hannah was about to climb in when she was aware of wild movements on the back seat. It took her a moment to realize Greg was there, with his arms round a girl whose legs were the most visible part of her. They'd shrunk down almost to the floor to avoid being seen. Hugo stepped backwards in alarm, but recovered quickly.
"Get out, Greg," he said calmly.
"Just admiring your car, Grandpa?"
His face was scarlet as he got out, pulling the girl by the hand. She dragged her hat off the seat behind her and was covering her face with it. With an embarrassed giggle, she pulled down the skirt of her crumpled blue dress.
"Greg, it might be wise to fasten your flies before you meet someone else."
Hannah gasped, but sure enough the buttons could be seen gaping on Greg's striped morning trousers. He was complying hurriedly.
"What would your grandmother say if she knew?" Hugo called after him. "She'd be very shocked."
As they disappeared out into the garden, Hannah found Hugo grinning down at her.
"Hot-blooded," she said.
"He's young."
"I'm afraid he's a fool. Not so much because of this. But he's too intent on having a good time. He's never going to achieve anything. I had high hopes for Greg."
He sighed. "But they won't come to anything." Hugo couldn't make up his mind. It was so unlike him to dither that it bothered him more. He sipped his sherry and let his eyes wander across the cards and holly on Hannah's drawing-room mantelpiece. It was the Sunday before Christmas, and he and Eunice had been invited to supper. It was a meal with a purpose rather than a social occasion. Greg had become engaged. What was the girl's name? Hillary. Yes, that was it. She'd been drinking sherry a few minutes ago. Greg had taken her home. She lived just round the corner. Eunice didn't want her to hear what was said. It was a family matter, and she wasn't family yet. A nice enough girl, polite, no great beauty, but Hugo found youth itself attractive. Graceful legs, and showing more of them than seemed decent, in a skimpy blue skirt that made Eunice's eyebrows go up, and a powder blue cloche that covered all but a few tendrils of dark hair against her cheeks. When Greg had first introduced the girl and spoken of marriage, Eunice had said, "It's all very well for a girl to marry young, but a man needs more maturity." "Not sure what to make of that," Hugo had said. "You married me when I was 20. Greg's the same age." "A man needs to find his feet first," she corrected. "Marriage can't take place on a shoestring." He might have known she'd meant money. "It's time you did something for him, Hugo." He sighed, wanting to put off making decisions for Greg. He'd thought 21 quite early enough. Necessary to do it now, if he's to marry. And in spite of his misgivings, tonight's dinner had been arranged. Hugo's eyes seemed to find their way to Hannah even when he meant to keep them away. She was wearing a red dinner dress that fell loosely to her hips. Eunice didn't approve of the strange modern fashions. "Matt's found a new lease of life since the news from Egypt broke last month," Hannah told him. "He scours the newspapers daily to see what else they've found." Hugo had never seen Matt in such a state of animation before. His eyes glistened, his usually sallow cheeks were flushed. "Such a wonderfully exciting find for Howard Carter, to clear 16 steps and see a sealed door with the name of Tutankhamun on it." His face was radiant. "He's found unbelievable treasures." "Absolutely priceless treasures," Eunice put in, patting the fluffy white curls on the top of her head. Even she had read of them. "Gilt couches, their ends in the form of fabulous golden beasts, great gilt snakes, bouquets of gilt flowers, inlaid caskets, alabaster vases, some beautifully carved," Matt listed. "I'd love to see them all." "I wish Greg would come back," Hannah worried, looking at her watch. "Everything's cooked. I don't want it to spoil." "It won't hurt for a few minutes," Eunice consoled easily, getting up on painful feet to help herself to more sherry. Hugo knew she'd be the first to complain if she didn't have adequate help in the house. Now she made light of the fact that Matt's housekeeper had retired, and the woman hired to replace her had departed in high dudgeon after less than a month because Matt had upset her. Hannah said it wouldn't do her any harm to do more in the house herself, that she could manage well enough. She came now to refill his glass. "Can you imagine what it means to find a tomb like that?" Matt's eyes still blazed at him. "I would give my back teeth." The news was firing half England with enthusiasm for Egyptology. Hugo felt touched by it himself. Matt was passionate. "I'd give anything to have been in the Valley of the Kings last month." He might have been there, thought Hugo, if I'd not given him a business to run, or he'd be with Woolley and Mallowan in Mesopotamia, or Evans in Knossos. Of course he'd still have wanted to be with Carter, since his find had eclipsed all others, but he'd have been happier in any sweltering dusty country on a dig. "I'd give anything to go there now." The glance Matt cast in his direction made Hugo more guilt-stricken. He sighed. His motives had been the best, but with hindsight, his money had not enriched Matt's life. Quite the opposite. Hannah murmured, "They say excavation and cataloguing will take Carter 10 years. Hugo studied her large features and high cheekbones, and asked himself if she was trying to tell him he must let Matt go. "It's taken Leonard Woolley 10 years in Ur of the Chaldees," Matt said. "I'm thinking of writing to Howard Carter to see if I might visit the tomb." "I hear he's inundated with important people all wanting to do that," Hugo said sourly. "Photographers and writers. But I'm an archaeologist, Father. I'll be useful." They all heard the front door slam. "Greg's here at last." Hannah got up with a jerk. "I'll see about dishing up." Greg came in. He reminded Hugo of Eunice's father. He was better looking than Matt had ever been, or he himself, for that matter, and didn't appear to lack maturity. Hugo cleared his throat, wanting to get it all sorted out, but Hannah was calling them to the table. The dining room was reached through double mahogany doors that matched those leading from the drawing room. The silver and crystal sparkled in the candlelight. There were white flowers on the starched white cloth. Hannah's one remaining maid waited to serve the meal. "Such good news about Dorothy," Eunice tucked into the salmon. "It'll be lovely to have a new baby in the family." It was Hannah's turn to flush. Hugo could see envy there, and anxiety too. "Dorothy is very lucky," she said, and Matt nodded agreement. Hugo had to stifle a chuckle. Howard Carter had upstaged Dorothy's announcement as far as her father was concerned. "About Greg," Eunice reminded him. Her eyes were steely with determination. He could see her pink scalp shining through her thin hair.
"We've come here to settle what you'll do to help. Aren't you going to get on with it?"
Hannah's eyes were twinkling with sympathy. He said,
"So, Greg, you want to follow your sister's example, get married and have a family?"
"Get married anyway," he mumbled.
"Traditionally, the time when the family gives a helping hand. And you'll be 20 next month?"
"You're luckier than I was there, Greg," his father put in. "I had to wait until I was 25.
Hugo took heart. Delaying the gift had not helped Matt.
"You were a full-time student, still at university at Greg's age," he pointed out. "It wouldn't have been appropriate."
It was no good expecting him to make godlike decisions for the family when he knew now he'd made the wrong one for Matt.
"What do you want me to do for you?"
Greg was chewing as though roast lamb was the most important thing in his life. Hugo knew he'd embarrassed him, but what was momentary embarrassment compared with the freedom to choose his own way of life?
"It's very kind of you to help me, Grandpa. Getting married is very expensive. I've had something in mind for you for several years," he said. "A company making margarine."
He saw Greg's face stiffen.
"But it doesn't have to be that," he added hastily.
"Father, I think you ought to know."
Matt was pale now and rather subdued.
"I want to get away from Evans's for a while. I've been showing Greg how to run things. I want him to take over from me."
Hugo let the breath out of his lungs slowly and gave thanks that Matt had finally made up his mind. It had taken him far too long.
"You'll be off to Egypt, I take it, if Howard Carter will have me."
Hugo began to relax.
"What are your plans, Greg? You have no ambitions to dig up some desert looking for pots?"
He laughed. "You know I haven't, Grandpa. My ambition is to do exactly what you've done."
"And he's going to start by running Evans's for me," Matt confirmed.
Hugo laid down his knife and fork. Greg wasn't going to do exactly what he'd done. He'd started to make real money by the time he was Greg's age.
"You sure that's what you want, Greg?"
"Yes, I'm sure I could do it."
Hugo forked meat into his mouth.
"What about this margarine factory? I've had it for years. I bring in the oil from West Africa. It's a growing business, will grow bigger. People have to eat, and it's cheaper than butter."
Greg was hesitant.
"I feel I should give all my attention to Evans's while Dad's away."
"It might be too much for him," Matt agreed, trying to run two businesses at once.
Too much?"
Hugo's voice resounded round the room. He couldn't believe it. Even now Matt didn't realize the scale on which he operated.
"I've run over 20 at one time. It isn't difficult. The margarine factory virtually runs itself. But if you don't want it, Greg, I know I can sell it. In fact, I was approached not so long ago."
"What you don't realize, Matt, or you, Greg, is that I don't get myself bogged down with the day-to-day running of any business. You can hire a good manager to do that for you. What I do is control overall strategy. Make sure they all function efficiently and at the height of profitability."
"Do you think I should put in a manager, then?"
Matt was unusually hesitant.
"You've just told me you have. Greg's going to manage it, isn't he? You could have promoted somebody else years ago if he'd wanted more time away. I want you to do things in your own way."
He hadn't seen Evans's accounts since he'd handed them back at the end of the war. His opinion had not been asked on any point since. He was fairly certain the company was less profitable now. All Matt's energy went on prehistoric antiquities, and Greg didn't seem to have energy for anything.
"So what you really want, Greg, is money to buy a house and help support a wife?"
"Yes, please, Grandpa."
He sounded grateful at last. Hugo had already worked out the value of the margarine works. Now he mentioned a sum, roughly half, which he was prepared to make over to Greg. The lad's beautiful blue eyes practically came out on stalks. His gratitude doubled.
"Now you can name the day," Hugo said dryly.
He was afraid there was more Schofield in Greg than Mortimer. He didn't even realize what he'd turned down.
Hugo told himself it was ridiculous to feel let down. It was his own fault, and his alone. He should have chosen more wisely when he'd chosen his wife. He'd never stopped to think then that the Schofield traits could have a stronger hold in their family than those he'd contributed. The clock in the hall struck three. Hannah Mortimer tossed in bed for the 10th time, waiting hopelessly for sleep to come again. As usual, Matt was snoring. He always slept like a log. In the silvery half-light, she could see the pile of new summer shirts he'd left balanced on his tall boy. He'd bought them for his forthcoming trip to Egypt. He'd written to Howard Carter and was going to see Tutankhamun's tomb for himself. Matt had taken her to Mesopotamia once, and she'd enjoyed it. His knowledge and enthusiasm had spilled over to fire her own. But this time he hadn't asked her to go with him, and seemed to assume she wouldn't want to. Yet she felt a greater interest in the antiquities being discovered in Egypt, because there had been so much about them in the press. It drove home to her just how wide the rift between them had become. Matt seemed to be withdrawing even further from her. She no longer knew what he was thinking or feeling. More and more they were going their separate ways. His interest in archaeology was the only thing that brought him to life. She knew now she should never have told him about her baby. Things had not been the same between them since, and any mention of Elizabeth shortened his temper too. "She's thriving," Hannah had told him. "Clarissa says she's got a good appetite and is eating solid foods now."
"That's normal, isn't it? I'd rather not know."
"I like to have news of her."
"It's unhealthy, Hannah, following every step of her progress. You'd do better to forget her."
She knew it was a terrible mistake to say, "Clarissa says she's a beautiful baby, a swan amongst ducklings in Maisie's brood. If I were to see her now..."
Matt had turned on her in anger. "You can't go anywhere near Yarrow again."
"I can't leave all the responsibility."
"You'll only cause trouble for Dorothy. Clarissa will cope. Come on now, see sense. Say you'll stay out of the way."
Grudgingly, she had. To refuse would only have alienated Matt further.
"The less you have to do with your friend, the better, after this."
Hannah sighed and pummeled her pillow. Dorothy's downfall was still crushing her, although everybody else seemed to have put it behind them. What it had given her was this terrible longing for Elizabeth, the baby she couldn't have. The whole year had been an emotional purge that left less in her life, and she knew all too clearly that future years would be exactly the same unless she did something about it. She must try to get closer to Matt. Surely he'd welcome it. He must have this empty feeling, too. The next thing she knew, Polly the maid was opening the curtains. Hannah struggled to open her eyes in the grey morning light. She knew she'd made up her mind to do something, but for the moment it was gone, like a forgotten dream. Matt was already out of bed and pouring himself a cup of morning tea on the tray put down by her bed. She felt sleep-sodden and had to force herself to sit up.
"Matt, can I come to Egypt with you?"
As he turned from the window, she saw a flicker of surprise on his face, then something else. Yes, it could only be reluctance.
"Are you sure you want to? I expect to spend a lot of time working in the tomb."
She made herself say, "I did enjoy it last time."
"That was different, Hannah. We visited the big museums and traveled a little, saw several different sites. This time I'll be staying in the Valley of the Kings. You'd soon get bored."
"I don't think so. There'll be other wives there, surely."
"I don't know. I'm expecting to stay a long time. A year, perhaps. I want to get involved, do real archaeological work."
Hannah felt she wasn't making much progress.
"Couldn't I help? There must be something useful I could do."
"I think it would be better if you stayed here. I won't have time to entertain you."
He went to the bathroom and banged the door. She heard his bath running. Entertain her, indeed. She poured herself a cup of tea, knowing Matt wasn't prepared to give an inch. She felt rejected. She was being pushed to the sidelines, and there seemed no way back.
She went downstairs for breakfast some 5 minutes after Matt. Before she opened the dining-room door, she could hear his voice raised in argument. It made her feel worse. Greg faced her across the table with mutinously flushed cheeks. "Good morning, Greg. What's the matter?" Matt looked thoroughly exasperated.
"He wants to go to Deauville now. That's what's the matter."
He swung on Greg again.
"You agreed. You said you'd run the factory so I could go to Egypt. Haven't I been handing everything over to you? I've been planning it for weeks, and you know it."
"I'll do what you want, Dad."
There was a whining note in Greg's voice. "I just want to get away for a few days."
"A few days? Why go all that distance, then? I was hoping to go next week."
"You haven't got your tickets yet."
"It's just as well I haven't, isn't it?"
Polly was bringing in scrambled eggs and hot toast for them. Nobody spoke until she'd placed a plate before each of them and gone.
"Why do you have to go now?" Matt spluttered. "I can't believe it. Why now, for God's sake?"
"Hillary and I broke it off last night. I'm a bit churned up."
Hannah's fork fell back on her plate with a clatter.
"Greg, I am sorry.
I need a bit of a break, Dad, that's all."
"What happened?" Hannah asked. Greg turned on her balefully. He was powerfully good-looking, and now his grandfather had settled a large sum of money on him, it seemed no bride could ask for more. He must be the ultimate catch.
"Hillary seemed a nice girl."
"We changed our minds. All right." His tone was aggressive.
She assumed Greg was more polite to his girlfriends than he was to her.
"Does that mean you'll be staying on here?"
"Of course it does. I've just said, haven't I? It's all off."
"I understand you're upset, Greg," she said stiffly. "I'm just asking whether you intend to go ahead and buy the house."
"No. What's the point?"
"I'm sure you're right. You'll be more comfortable here with us."
His blue Scofield eyes continued to glower at her. He might appear to have every blessing the world could give, but he certainly wasn't happy. He turned to his father.
"Of course I'll manage the factory for you. I've said I would, haven't I? But you've never mentioned any dates. I assumed there was plenty of time for me to have a few days off first."
Hannah stifled a sigh. It seemed neither of them was particularly interested in the business. She hoped it would continue to provide for their needs.